Today, we're going to do the last two modules. I think I mentioned yesterday that the material that we put together, if I were delivering that to a room full of business leaders, I'm confident that it would have taken more time. And I'm at fault for it going so fast because, as I mentioned to you also, this is my first opportunity to speak to a room full of folks who've given their lives to serving God full time. And so the examples and discussion points that I would probably bring up to a room full of business professionals wouldn't necessarily be appropriate for our discussion here. And so therefore we went through it a little quicker than I thought we would. But that's okay. As we saw yesterday, Brother Terry, who is a fairly typical independent Baptist preacher, filled out the time very well and took us right up to the end of the day. Now I promise you that today, I'm probably going to finish just before lunch. We'll see. And I don't know if Brother Terry will then keep us through until 3 o'clock or not. He assures me that he won't, but he is a Baptist preacher, so, Pastor, all apologies, please. I think of the Apostle Paul, and I've mentioned this, Pastor Cross and I have talked about this before, that the Apostle Paul, and I don't know if I said this or not, but he must have been a Baptist preacher, because you read a lot of his epistles, and he'll have a chapter start, and he'll say, "And finally, brethren," and then four chapters later, he's still writing. So he must have been a Baptist preacher. Also wanted to share something with you yesterday, and this is from my heart as a layman, not a man called of God to minister full-time. But it stems from what Brother Emmanuel shared with us, and also a lot of things that Brother Terry shared during the time that we were down here working to build this training center. And that is that when these men were talking about their personal experiences, about real things that happened in their lives during their ministry, I just, and during lunch yesterday, when Brother Bryant was sharing what he was doing, and you guys were sharing about the different day that you discovered was more effective, I mean, I just couldn't get enough of that. I thought, you know, this is good stuff. I mean, I hear the missionaries come to our church and they share their ministry with a video, and I love that stuff, and then they preach a sermon, and no, I go to church a lot, and I hear a lot of sermons, but unless I've had this opportunity to work with Brother Terry and be here this week and talk with you folks, I wasn't aware of those things, and I just couldn't get enough of it. I wanted to hear more. So I chatted with Brother Terry earlier, and I asked him if I could share this, and he thought it was okay. So my recommendation as a layman is that when you go to your supporting churches, share more of that. If they're like me, you're going to get their attention, and it's really going to be powerful. I just saw the pants, and it got my attention.
I was horsing around this morning.
I got to get a picture. How strong is your lens? Well, you talk about derailing a train of thought. That'll sure do it. But I would recommend that you consider doing that. I just yesterday, Brother Emmanuel, you just captured me with what you were sharing, and I appreciate that very much. And I really believe that the folks in the churches that sponsor you would really enjoy hearing that. And as Brother Terry said, as part of the message that you're delivering from God's Word, to build that into the message that you're giving. So that's just personal for me as a layman. Now, this morning, we're going to try to get completely set up here. Is this thing on, brother? Yes, it is. All right, okay. This morning, we're going to start with what's titled 10 Basic Skills of Outstanding Leadership. And we'll start by saying that all of us undoubtedly know someone, or we've heard of someone who is known to be a good leader. And these 10 attributes or skills that we're going to discuss, I believe those who are known as good leaders excel at either all or most all of these. And we're going to start with integrity. Now, integrity means honesty, but it means more. It refers to having strong internal guiding principles that one does not compromise. It means treating others as you would wish to be treated. Matthew 7:12. Most of us know that as the golden rule, but maybe what you don't know, perhaps you do, but even in the cold world of business, this is used, as I'm using it here today, and the unsaved also know it to be the golden rule. And it is used, and pardon the way I say this, but it's preached in business. You treat others the way you want them to treat you. Many experts believe that a solid sense of right and wrong and strong guiding principles are the most essential and basic of all leadership skills. Integrity promotes trust, and not much is accomplished without trust. And we're going to deal specifically with that issue, that topic of trust, as we close out today. Integrity, or a lack of integrity, is reflected in the way we think. It's reflected in our attitudes and in our actions. People can't see directly integrity, but they judge it pretty accurately based upon our actions and our words. And remember, I shared yesterday about the evangelist who came to my first church, and the title of his sermon was "There's Always Two Little Eyes Watching." They're watching this along with other things. They're judging our integrity based upon what they see us do and upon the words that we use. So I'm going to ask a series of questions on these things, and I don't intend for you to answer these, but the questions are merely there to cause you to think about the topic as it relates to you and your leadership style. I actually got ahead of myself. Remember, rust. Blame this on rust. The second outstanding skill that these outstanding leaders have is that they're able to develop a vision and have a strategy to achieve that vision for their organization. And they're excellent communicators. But even excellent communicators can learn how to do that better by becoming and learning how to be better listeners. And as we heard from Brother John this morning, people know if we're good listeners or not. Evidently, Nikki was used to your style of listening and was impressed that you were doing it better. Relationships. These outstanding leaders know how to develop and maintain strong relationships. They've learned how to influence people, how to persuade people to their way of thinking. And they're adaptable, they're flexible, not on their core beliefs, especially in the work that you've been called to do. You know, your core beliefs are things that you don't want to compromise. But there are a lot of things that aren't as important. And I think I learned that yesterday, especially from Brother Junior when he was talking about his field. And they were going out, and I'm paraphrasing, so forgive me if I'm not exactly on track with what you said, but They were looking at establishing a church and meeting times, and so they were doing the Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night standard American approach. And Brother Junior, if I get this wrong, please correct me, but he indicated that he discovered in that culture that a lot of other things were done on Sunday, domestic type things. And so that's why people weren't coming to church. So he moved the services to a different night, and people started to come. So being adaptable, being flexible, not about your core beliefs, but about those things that will help the gospel of Jesus Christ go forward. And I think that's what Brother Junior demonstrated. These good leaders, these outstanding leaders know how to build a team. They know how to coach and how to develop. Not just develop the people that report to them, but self-development. If you want to discourage people from their own self-development, don't do it yourself. If they don't see you working with self-development, then they're not going to feel like they have to either. And I guess it goes back to that old adage of walking the talk, not do as I say, not as I do. And I'm reminded of a number of years ago when we lived up in the Chicago area, and the elder Richard Daley was mayor. You know, he was mayor of Chicago like 212 years, I think, or something like that. But I remember when we lived there, there was this exchange between him and the media, and he was angry because the media printed what he said. And in his style, you know, I don't know if you ever saw short, round Mayor Daley, but he said to the media, "Don't print what I say, or don't print what I say, print what I mean." Those were his words. Outstanding leaders are not afraid to make decisions. That's, after all, a leader. That's what you do. That's one of the things that you do, and it's one of the things that you shouldn't be afraid to do. Some decisions are difficult. Some decisions are not very easy. Yesterday, for example, we talked about the propensity to take an expert simply because they're expert at something and appointing them to a leadership role. Well, if you've made a mistake as the leader, now you've got to make the decision to remove that person. And I think that's a good example of an unpleasant decision that you're going to have to implement and follow through on. And I'm right now thinking of a number of situations where I've had to deal with that. Let me give you one. I was in Little Rock, Arkansas, and the plant manager chose a fellow who was an outstanding maintenance mechanic and made that person the department supervisor. And he really knew his stuff. Well, we hired a maintenance mechanic to come in, new hire, and they go through a 90-day probationary period, and that's explained up front. We're going to look at you during these 90 days and we'll determine whether or not we're going to keep you or let you go during that period. Well, this guy wasn't cutting the mustard, as they say, and the supervisor decided, you know, we just got to let him go. And when he come to that realization, I could see him just kind of wilt. And he just was not going to be able to have that meeting with that new hire and tell that person, "I'm sorry, but you're just not going to be working with this company beyond that point." So he came to me and he asked me if I would help him. And I was trying to coach him through how to do it. And you could see his knees knocking. He just couldn't. I said, "Okay, fine, I'll do it, but I want you in the office with me." And so he brought the guy to my office and I chatted with the guy and explained to him, reminded him of the agreement. You know, when you come in as a new hire, we look at you for 90 days, and during that time, if it's just not working out, we're going to let you go, cut the cord. And I could see this supervisor over here, he just didn't know what to do. He was frozen. And the real telling part of that was it come time for the guy to leave, and I stood, and he stood, and we shook hands. this supervisor could hardly stand up. He was so weak-kneed and shook up from this experience. So he knew that the decision had to be made. He just didn't want to make it, and he didn't want to follow through with it. So good leaders, outstanding leaders, are not afraid of decision-making. And then planning. Outstanding leaders know that the value of a plan. The plan provides guidance. It's something that the team can look at and know that they all have to be on the same page, because that's our goal, that's our mission, that's our plan. Now let's talk about integrity. Integrity means honesty, but it means a lot more. It refers to having those strong internal guiding principles. It's the golden rule. It's do unto others as you want them to do unto yourself. I want to ask you a series of questions as I started to get to a moment ago. And again, these, you don't have to answer these, certainly not in the group. But I want you to look at these questions and think about how it relates to your own, perhaps, perception of integrity, or even your own integrity. How deep are your convictions on the things that you believe in? And I don't necessarily mean for this group the core, the center of your faith, but those things that are perhaps at that next level. I give you an example. My sister and her husband are both rock-solid born-again believers. They're not Baptists. They've visited with us at Faith Baptist, but they've had a huge influence on my Christian life. My sister, a number of years ago, came under conviction about whether to wear pants or not. That's a personal conviction, but it's not the core of her faith. But she made a commitment to our Lord and Savior that she would not wear pants. Her and my brother-in-law have been married now 55, 56 years, something like that. And just this last June at our family reunion over in Cosby, there was an opportunity to go to on a rafting trip on one of the rivers. There were some tickets available, no cost to anyone, and they were asking folks if they wanted to go, and asked my sister and brother-in-law, you know, would you like to go? It's free. And my sister said, no, I wouldn't be able to do that in my skirt. And they said, someone, not knowing her conviction, I suppose, said, well, wear pants. No, I'm not interested, but thank you. Well, wear pants under your skirt. No, won't do that either. And that's because that's a conviction that she gave to God a number of years ago. It's not, as I said, the core of her faith, but it's a conviction. Obviously very deep for her in her life. What do you believe in so much about your work that you will stand up to anyone about it? Clearly, if we're talking about our faith, that's one thing. But if we're talking about other things, like you know, which night to have the service, that's not such a big deal, so you don't really need to stand up to anyone about that. How much are you willing to compromise your important beliefs? Not your core beliefs, your important beliefs. There may be a time when it's appropriate to make that compromise. The color of the paint on the wall. You know, I don't know who chose it. I like it, but there may be someone who didn't, and then maybe they would go to Brother Terry, and he might see some value in compromise. To what extent do your behavior and the choices you make align with your guiding values and principles? Let's talk about having a vision. A leader must have a clear idea where his organization is going beyond this month's results or this year's budget. Having a long-term vision. Even those who, and I think of Brother Nader going over to work with Brother Brahanu, you're going to be there as perhaps more of what they might call a tactical leader. You're going to help him. You're going to assist him. But even in that role, tactical leaders need to know what the mission is. They need to be clear about that, and they need to refer to it often, not just for themselves, but for those who they're working with. They need to be able to communicate that vision. So the first question is, can you see or do you see where your organization is going? Do you have that vision of where you want it to be in 5 years? How often do you talk about the ways in which what you're doing in your area is related to the overall mission? I think about perhaps Faith Baptist. You know, Pastor Cross is God's chosen leader for that ministry. And Brother Mark is there to assist. So, you know, what about this talking about the ways in which they're going to achieve the mission? And what is it that Brother Mark is doing in his day-to-day activities, or Brother Gary or others, to achieve that mission? And do they talk about it often enough? Brother Mark, I hope you don't mind me picking on you. He says that, but he'll probably get even later. Do you think and speak inspiringly about what the organization is doing and about the future of the organization? Because remember, there's not only two little eyes watching, there are always ears listening. So when you speak about your ministry or your organization, are you doing it in a way that will inspire others? Communication. I know from personal experience as an HR manager that the chief complaint of employees in nearly every business and industrial organization of all types, small, large, it doesn't matter, is that there is a lack of communication. We would do what we called employee opinion surveys every 2 years. And we would see swings in a lot of the categories. But on the issue or the topic of communication, it was always lacking. And so we tried to do more and more and more, but it seemed that no matter how much we did, on that survey, we still got dinged as, you know, we just didn't communicate enough. And when I would go out and I would ask individuals, well, what would you like to see more? You know, Brother Mike, you say we're not communicating well enough. Well, what is it that you'd like to hear from us? Well, I don't know. You just don't do it. When you're dealing with an organization, no matter what it is, if you've got people who view themselves as employees of that organization, they're going to have this sense that the leadership is aware of things and doing things that they're not sharing with everybody else. Now, that may be true in a lot of situations, but I know it's not true in a lot of situations, but they still get dinged for this perceived lack of communication. Communication within the context of leadership refers to both interpersonal, between leader and followers, and then the overall flow of needed information throughout the organization. So on the one hand, it's interpersonal, where you're sharing information with individuals, which we all do. But then there's this need for the leader to share a more generalized level of information with the whole organization. I think of Pastor Cross when there's a business meeting type of a session, where pastor will present to the entire congregation or to those that are there at that meeting what the issue is, explain the options, and then ask for their input, and then ask for a vote. That's that need to share generalized throughout the organization. Yes, sir.
Completely out when I first began was meeting on a weekly basis. my heart, vision, things that are going on in ministry. So they know what I'm thinking. They know how to pray. And that's the focus of it. And then with our larger group, with our officers that we meet once a month, we have a rather long meeting. And it does not have to be that long. But the reason that I make it longer is that we go over not only the particulars of ministry and financial accountability that's involved in that with every penny accounted for, but also I look at it as a time of communication where there is that back and forth with those leaders in our church. And they will tell you, and I believe they will tell you, we don't present anything to the church body that we have not discussed rather thoroughly and prayed and are in agreement, completely unanimous before we take it to the church body. So that when I get up before the church and present something and give the history, I have a level of confidence that those that are the leaders in our church know all about this. This is not a surprise. This is something that they're in full agreement with and are backing through their prayers and support. And that has served us well over the years. And early on in my ministry, I didn't see that. Not quite as I do now, and how important that is. And even with Brother Mark and with Brother Gary, that's where it begins. These two men probably know me better than anybody in the world. Mark especially, because we worked so long together. They know what I think, they know what I'm going to do. And it's not that they have to know me that much, but it's just the fact that there is that unity that comes through communication.
Yeah. And thank you, Pastor Cross. And that made me think of something that I started with yesterday morning when I suggested that ministry is a type of business. What Pastor Cross just shared with us is also practiced by the outstanding leaders in the world of business and industry. And I've worked with both kinds. I can recall a manager who operated exactly the way you just described yourself, Pastor Cross. Before he would take a situation to the general population within his plant or his organization, he would call in all of his managers, much like Pastor Cross described, and get their input. And while they may not have had a unanimous 100% agreement in terms of all of the details, when they left the room, they were all on the same page and they were all supporting what that manager was going to deliver. I've also worked with, in fact, I described a young woman who was promoted a little early, in my opinion. She did the opposite. I would go to meetings and I would be sitting around the conference room table and some other managers would say, "Where'd that come from? Why is she So my recommendation is that you follow the example that Pastor Cross has provided for us. And also remember about communication. Communication isn't just throwing words out, it's listening. Mm-hmm. Pastor Cross in that meeting, he described he's listening to the other leadership at Faith Baptist. He wants to hear. He wants their input that may influence the approach, the final approach that he chooses to take. But then also remember, ultimately, what another thing we talked about, that that final decision rests with the leader. Whatever it is, he can choose to accept, agree, or disagree with the input he gets. But ultimately, the leader is responsible and accountable for that decision that's made. So on the subject of communication, how much and how willingly do you speak out and keep information flowing? And that's key. And I think in terms of those employee opinion surveys, it's fine if you only communicate important information once a year, but you're not going to get much of a return on that investment of your time to communicate. As we say here, you keep it flowing. You share, you share, you share. And then, conversely, can you keep confidential information confidential? Now, certainly in your role, that I think would be critically important. People are going to share things with you in your role that they simply don't want anybody else to know. I've worked with people who are in positions of leadership, and they're told things in confidence that I don't need to know. I didn't have a need to know, but they'll come to my office and say, "Hey, I don't want you to tell anybody else, but..." Well, you just told me. You know, it's now it's no longer confidential. My wife would... I don't know that she really got upset, but she would look at me kind of funny-like because she would interact with the wives of other managers, and she would hear things, and she would say, "Did you know?" "Well, yeah." "Well, why didn't you tell me?" "Well, it was confidential." "How did you find out?" How often can you and do you listen more than you speak in conversations with people in your organization? Two ears, one mouth. Listen twice as much as we talk. How would you assess your communication skills with each of your employees? And I'd like for you to think about that word "each." Remembering there is no one size fits all. I've learned over the years as I've had different staff groups as I've moved around the country, and I think about my most recent one in Alabama. I had a group of outstanding people reporting directly to me. But they were all different. And depending upon what the issue was, and it might have been the same issue that I needed to communicate to these people, but I had to do it individually, because I knew they would each take it differently. So I would call them into my office after I got to know them and know how to communicate to them. And then I would communicate these things to each of them a little differently because I knew how they would respond. So how would you assess your communication skills when you're communicating important information to each of the people in your organization? And then how do you handle bad news when you receive it? The outstanding leader doesn't kick and scream and throw things. I just had a memory of early in Obama's first administration, and there was a meeting in the White House with congressional leaders, and he was so frustrated. I saw this on the news. He got up and he kicked the door open as he left the room. That, my friends, is not outstanding leadership. The outstanding leader doesn't show frustration, doesn't do those kinds of childish things. They will listen to the bad news. They will absorb it. They will thank the person for sharing. And then they'll move on. They'll deal with it. But you don't get up and kick the door through. So how do you handle bad news when you receive it? We're going to talk about relationships, networking. That was a big term in industry. If you want to get ahead, you have to network. Oh, how I hated that. It brought up thoughts of people complaining. It's not what you know, it's who you know. But I learned that in the world of business and industry, that's true. That's how you get ahead. You have to know something, obviously. You can't just want to be a head chef somewhere and absolutely don't know how to turn on a stove or adjust the temperature in an oven. So you got to know something about what you're doing, but it's networking. I have in my notes here, it's the art of social schmoozing. But it's also an important relationship skill. Relationships develop from good interpersonal and group communication skills, but relationship skills also go deeper. A leader who likes dealing with people issues, and I think about my career, and I didn't mind it. I kind of liked it, but on some days I didn't. And in your ministries, if you've been a full-time pastor of a church, perhaps you're somewhat the same. Some days you don't mind, some days you like it, and some days you don't. But a leader who likes dealing with people issues and who can initiate and deepen relationships with others has a great leadership advantage. This is a good leader who can build a team and achieve good results. And in my notes, I have this kind of leadership, the one who can build those strong personal relationships. It's based on personal power, not position power. I think of the group that I had in Alabama, and I had developed a very strong personal relationship with each individual. Because remember, they all had to be different. But it had achieved a level, I like to think, that they knew I had their back. Even if they messed up, I had their back. I was their boss, and I was going to assist them through whatever the issue might be. And they shared things with me at a very personal level that, as a man, and I had a female employee, and she would share things with me that made me a little uncomfortable, but I tried not to show that uncomfort in the meeting. I wanted her to know that I cared and that she could come to me and talk about those things. And I would always ask, and when we were done, I wanted to make sure that, when we open this office door, do you want this to go any further? And if she said no, it didn't go any further. But it gave her the opportunity to think about the question and to give me permission to perhaps take it to the next level or not. I had a situation at a facility in Iowa. We had a pretty boy plant manager who ended up in Los Angeles after this. But he had a personal secretary. And after I'd been there for a while, she shared with me that she felt harassed inappropriately by this fellow. And initially, I asked her that question. I said, "Now, when this door opens, do you want me to take this to the next level?" And at that time, she said no. She said, just keep it between us for right now. That facility was a secondary facility for me. My primary operation was in Illinois. But I got a call from her one day, and she said, I'm ready to take it up to the next level. But I gave her the opportunity to make that decision and to let me know what she wanted me to do. But she knew that I was listening and that I cared. And it built that relationship such that she trusted me. So when it comes to relationships, what is the level of trust and respectful feelings that you have with each of your employees? Think about it. How about with each of your peers? I think about Brother Emmanuel and the other missionaries in that region. And how they might answer this question for themselves. Clearly, that one that you were talking about, relationship building was not very important. He was more inwardly focused. And you don't find success, and you're certainly not going to be an outstanding leader if it's always about me. I'll remind you of what Colin Powell said. It's amazing what we can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit. How easy or how difficult is it for you to initiate new relationships? For some people, it's easy. For others, not so easy. And if you want to be an effective leader, you need to develop that talent. Yes, sir.
I know in husband-wife relationship type stuff, we talk about problem because they want an answer, and how women share a problem because they just want to share the problem. They don't necessarily always want an answer. Did you find that true in business as well? That, and I realize that's a big general statement, but generally, were men coming to you seeking a solution, and generally, were women coming to you seeking somebody just to talk to?
You're dead on. That's absolutely true. And it's interesting you bring up spouses, because my spouse a number of years ago got hold of me one day after she had shared some issues or concerns. And of course, my reaction was to solve that problem for her and tell her what I thought she needed to do. And she said, "Look, I don't need you to solve my problems. I just want you to listen." So she taught me a valuable lesson very quickly. Yes, sir.
I don't know if this is a good time to answer this or not. If it's not, you can do it privately or later. But what if in your conversation with, a person you have a relationship with, it dawns on you that their personal problem is a big factor in the organization?
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
If you wait, then you're actually hurting the organization. If you don't wait,
There are, and thank you for bringing that up, there are some things that people know. And if they don't seem to know, I remind them during a conversation like that. But there are some things that I'm obligated to report. Sexual harassment is one in the business world. If an employee, male or female, came to me and alleged sexual harassment, I would let them know very quickly, I cannot keep this confidential. I'm obligated to take it to the next level.
Would that, and if it does, when you fix it, destroy the relationship that you have with that person?
Mm-hmm. But when they throw in that term sexual, at that point, it's out of my hands. I'm obligated, legally obligated, to take that to the next level.
Child abuse.
Yes, child abuse. It has to. And if you don't, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it's such a touchy situation, but once that's brought to your attention, you cannot make that mistake and let them make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
What the law says, then you're held accountability, and ultimately the responsibility comes off their shoulders, and it's on you to make that notification for the sake of the child first.
And those are two excellent reasons why, if it involves alleged child abuse, you're doing it because it's the right thing to do. You're doing it for the child, but you're also legally obligated. And if you fail to report that and take it to the next level, then you're held legally accountable for that. They'll get you. Back here first. Yes?
You had mentioned yesterday about giving a code of conduct to individuals when they first get hired. I think that's a great thing. So therefore, when someone comes up to you and they talk to you about an issue, but it violates from the code of conduct, I mean, as a leader or a boss or whatever, the minister over that individual that you might you have a direct authority of, what is the best way to handle that when they're coming to you and maybe for just talking purposes or just going through things, but it violates the code of conduct? What are the steps to deal with that situation?
It depends on what it is, and if it's a personal violation they're sharing, or if they're alleging someone else is violating it. For example, in that guide to conduct, there are going to be things about cell phone usage in the work environment. Now, that's something that you're not obligated to kick to the next level and take it from that one-on-one meeting, but it's something that you would deal with. Now, if they're alleging that someone else in the group is violating that, and they don't want you to take it out and say, "Hey, Brother Mike here says you're violating the cell phone policy." You're not going to do that. But now that you're aware of it, as the leader, obviously you're going to be more observant. And if you personally observe, then you can address it with the other person. So it just depends upon what's in the guide to conduct. Obviously, there should be things in there about sexual harassment or child abuse or whatever those things are, and you make that clear in that guide to conduct so everybody's aware of it, that if you come to me with that issue, it won't be kept confidential. It'll be kicked to the next level. So there are no surprises.
I know Matthew 18, especially the minister, Matthew 18 talks about, you know, the steps of church discipline, and he talks about how to handle, you know, issues that come up between individuals. Is that wise to put it in there? If one of these are violated, these are the steps to reestablish the relationship or handle the problem. Are these the exact steps within the code of conduct? To have that as written form, so when you give someone to understand, these are the steps to correct it.
That's a good idea. That would not be included in the guide to conduct. The form, the document that is the guide to conduct, would not have all of those steps, methods for resolving the issue. All you're doing in that guide to conduct is violating the topic and what the violation would be.
Okay. Well, you know, in like simple work environments, I've got my handbook, or as I taught at a school, we had a manual, a teacher's manual, a student manual, and it did outline these are the procedures when disciplinary actions are taken, even when I worked in a secular job. So, you know, that is something to consider.
In a larger book.
Yeah, not so close.
This guide to conduct, those that I'm familiar with, not just with my company, but with the other companies that I worked with, it was a shirt pocket document because you wanted them to have it on them. You wanted to give them the opportunity to keep it in the pocket or the wallet or whatever, because you didn't want them to forget that there is a code of conduct. And violation of these things, there are things that will happen to you if you violate these things. Brother John?
You kind of answered my question. I'm not going to see you later.
Okay. All right. Brother Terry gave me the high sign there a moment ago, but let me finish this one, please.
Yeah, that's fine.
How easy or how difficult is it for you to deepen existing relationships? There are people that you're going to work with, as and I think a pastor in Mark, you worked together for years and years and years, and clearly you want that relationship to deepen beyond just a work relationship. I have friends and relationships with people from all over the country who I've worked with over the years, and some of those relationships are deep personal relationships. I know, I'm confident that if I had a need, I call that person, they're here. But other relationships are just work-related. They're acquaintances from work. So depending upon who it is and where they are in the organization, you may need to deepen that relationship. That's something you're going to have to determine for yourself. And I think now we're going to take a... Yes, Pastor.
And because of the potential for good and excellence and effectiveness in ministry, the enemy targets this sometimes unrelentlessly, and it's so vitally important that we are aware of how he will do his best to enter into some relationships, cause difficulty, and it's wise for us to have good, strong guidelines that are set up, that are not crossed when it comes to relationships, because the potential that you're talking about in effective ministry is almost unlimited in this area. But there are so many casualties in ministry as well in relationships that are not guarded, that are not, you don't follow, and you get trapped up. You don't maybe perhaps see it coming. There's not not the safeguards that are in place. We're not to be ignorant of the enemy's devices. And so I just wanted to say an amen.
Thank you.
To what you're saying, and also a word of caution.
And I can speak from the perspective of business and industry and tell you, and I know this is certainly even more true in ministry, but I would caution managers about close relationships with someone of the opposite gender. Even in business and industry, if a male-female relationship develops between managers or between manager and someone at a lower level, it creates problems, not only for the manager, but for that other person as well, because the eyes are watching, the ears are listening, people are going to know about it, or they may think they know about it, and they start talking down here, and it'll boil up over time. Yes, sir, Brother Nader.
That's the same thing. I come from a business mindset as well, but that's towards your customers, or in our case, the church.
Yes. Well, thank you, everyone. We're going to take a 10-minute break, right, Brother Terry?
Yes.
Let's have a break and come back in 10 minutes.